Veterans Yoga Project is a nonprofit organization. Our mission is to support recovery and resilience among veterans, their families, and our communities. And we do that in three primary ways. First, it really started because as a psychologist and beginning yoga teacher, I found that yoga teachers benefited when they learned a little bit about trauma and post-traumatic stress, and especially for those who might be working with veterans who are dealing with PTSD. So the organization really grew initially out of efforts to train yoga teachers about trauma and post-traumatic stress. And so that is one of our primary initiatives as we run these mindful resilience for trauma recovery trainings, in which we teach. And we teach five tools for recovery: breathing, meditation, movement, rest, and gratitude. And through the practice of these five tools, people are able to recover quicker and build their resilience against life's inevitable stressors. And so that's the first thing we do is we, and I continue to do this, is we train yoga teachers how to work with trauma. The second thing is to provide healing retreats for veterans. We've done only a few of these, but they've been some of the most powerful experiences I've had, whether as a psychologist, as a yoga instructor, and all the work that I've done. The transformation that I've been able to see and witness and help facilitate when you take a veteran and or one of their loved ones and take them out of their usual environment and put them in a healing environment and let them breathe and move and rest and meditate and remember gratitude. That's a very powerful experience. So that's the second thing we do, are the healing retreats. And then where we actually have been spending most of our energy is to bring the resources to veterans. So starting yoga classes at vet centers, other VA facilities, university veteran student veteran organizations, other community-based veteran service organizations.
And just to find out a little bit about your own personal journey, when and why did you begin a yoga practice?
That is a good question. I first started doing yoga when I was working at a place called the Feathered Pipe Ranch, which is a healing and retreat center outside of Helena, Montana. Really one of the most phenomenal places on the planet. Their foundation runs these healing retreats, and the place was really designed for, and its mission is to create world leaders, but also to provide direction. And so I worked there for a few summers and slept in a tent and got to take yoga classes with, you know, sort of all the big yoga rock stars. And it was really those summers that I learned that the answers are inside, right? Like that when I have issues, it's about self-inquiry, right? It's becoming self-aware. And I think for, you know, again, yoga means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And even to me, it means a lot of different things. But part of what it means to me is being able to look at myself and be aware of myself and understand my own patterns, right? All the, you know, psychological patterns, all the tapes that play in my head, and understand whether they're really serving me or not, so that I can then decide if that's really living in line with my values and goals, or maybe I can try to change my behavior, right? Which is then a whole another challenge, but yoga can also be very helpful there.
Can you explain the idea that emotional trauma exists in the physical body?
Yes, I can speak to it in several ways. Well, one is you can talk about it just from like a pure learning, psychological learning theory, right? That when somebody undergoes a traumatic experience, everything about that experience is remembered, right? Your brain remembers, you know, the kind of situation you're in so that it can avoid that kind of situation, right? So for example, someone who was in a car accident, right? The very often, you know, many of us get into car accidents, and, you know, when you first get back into that car, you're a little skittish, you know, you might be driving a little bit more slow, you're a little bit more, you know, your heart might be racing a little bit, because your brain remembers that cars are dangerous, and they almost killed you, or they led to this horrible thing that happened. And not only is the brain going to remember that about sitting in a car, the brain is also going to remember the time of day that this traumatic event happened, the time of year that this traumatic event happened. The body and the brain remember everything about that traumatic event, and it's encoded into somehow into your brain, so that when any enough of those little pieces get remembered, or if you see many of these things that cue the trauma, it's going to cause your body to react like, hey, this trauma might be happening again. And so in that very way, the whatever position your body was in when the trauma happened, right? So I use the example often if you're driving a car, so you're driving the Humvee and your arms are out in front of you holding the steering wheel, when your arms are out in front of you in this way, whether it's conscious or most often unconsciously, right? When you put your arms back in that position, your brain is remembering, okay, let's get on alert a little bit here, right? Depending, you know, what level of alertness depends on what other cues are present. But now the brain is saying, okay, let's be on alert because this is the position that the trauma happened in. And so in that way, the trauma lives in the body from a very postural and physical point of view, and sort of just that basic learning theory where the brain is going to remember what position the body was in. But the brain's also going to remember not just what position your body was in, but your entire sense of self is based on your sense of physical self, right? Emotions at the very root are just physical sensations. They're, you know, it's this whole interoception process that happens unconsciously where our sense of who we are is very much determined by how we feel physically and sensationally in our body. And so in that same way, right, that's going to also be remembered, right? So when your body approaches that, and it won't approach that physical state because it'll be avoidance, but when it does, it'll also send the brain onto alert. So that's one way I sort of think about trauma getting stuck in the body. Another way you can think about it is that when you are undergoing a potentially traumatic experience, a stressful experience, your body goes into alert, your sympathetic nervous system revs up, right? So your heart races and your breathing gets more rapid and all the blood shunts away from digestion to your muscles so you can fight or flee, and your body gets prepared for action. And if that action isn't taken, right, your body is prepared for all this action. It has all this physical energy. It's ready to run or fight or flee. If it chronically has all this activation, or maybe not chronically, but acutely in that situation, but the body isn't allowed to actually use that energy, and you don't actually fight back, and you don't actually flee, right, because you can't, or you won't, or you don't, or you dissociate. All of that physical energy is still in the body. It never got spent.
And the stress hormones associated with that energy are swirling around and produce health effects.
Yes, exactly, right? And that's exactly what happens, and that's why you see that, sort of stepping away from post-traumatic stress a little bit, but this is part of post-traumatic stress because post-traumatic stress is a type of chronic stress. That's why we have all these, really significant health issues in our country and our world, because you do have all of those hormones and the cortisol that is making us less healthy, right? It's degrading the blood vessels. It's actually destroying the cells in your hippocampus. Which is part of the brain, right? Which is part of an important part of our memory center and understanding memories in context, and an important part of our memory in order to actually recover from post-traumatic stress. So it tends to lead to this cycle of sort of a downward spiral, right, where it's hard to break out of that spiral. And that's partly why we do what we do. Because that's all it takes sometimes.
Deep breathing.
Is you can take a breath. And for in that moment, you can at least stop that spiral downward, depending on what that actually means and where you actually are, right?
Because interestingly, we actually sometimes forget to take a breath when we're in a very challenging situation.
And I would say that every time you notice that you're really stressed out, notice, like, we hold our breath, like, so unconsciously. We all do it all the time. And it's part of the orienting response. It's like when you're in a dangerous situation, you're supposed to hold your breath so that you can, like, pay attention to sound and understand where it's coming from. There's no noise coming. And you're just, diverting your resources to being in that hyper state. So, yes, so breathing, it's so simple. And it doesn't have to be so loud or exaggerated either.